This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. In her career as a film actress, Albemarle County resident Sissy Spacek has often chosen roles that reflect her commitment to social causes. In her real life, Spacek says she recognizes the importance of the First Amendment, so she serves on the board of trustees of the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression. The Charlottesville-based center is hoping to build a monument to free speech on the downtown mall, in the form of a giant chalkboard that anyone can write on. Spacek has lent her support to the project by appearing before the city council, and on May 7th, she agreed to be interviewed by radio essayist Janice Jaquit at the Paramount Theater. CPN is now proud to present an edited portion of that interview.
Hello. This evening, we will have the great pleasure of getting to know a woman who's both our neighbor and an Academy Award-winning actress, Sissy Spacek. All right. In addition to being an award-winning actress, and the mother of Madison and Schuyler, and the wife of Jack Fisk, Sissy is also a patriot. She's a member of the board for the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression, and that's how she came to be here tonight, because Sissy is also a good sport. And you are obviously the perfect audience tonight, because you are all patriots. You are all actively supporting the monument to free speech through the tickets that you bought tonight. I know many of you have donated generously to this cause previously and will continue to do so until that monument is a reality on the downtown mall. And I think the first words that should be written on that chalkboard are, "Thank you, donors." One of the ways in which we exercise our First Amendment rights is through the art we produce. Sissy Spacek has created a work of art in every character she has inhabited, in every movie that she has graced. And I ought to know, because in the past couple of months, I think I've seen most of them in my private Sissy Spacek Film Festival in my living room out in Free Union. Before I introduce our guests, we're going to show you a brief montage of scenes from some of Sissy Spacek's movies.
Little did I realize that what began in the alleys and backways of this quiet town would end in the badlands of Montana.
Why am I here?
Because it's the prom.
Why am I here with you?
Because I asked you.
Having a party. Oh, geez. I love a party.
Oh, me too.
So, where's it at?
Where's what at?
You're at a party.
I'm not having a party. I thought you were having a party.
I am?
Well, yeah. Look at all that brown swagger.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of brown swagger. It's for my dad, for his trip. My dad, he's going to Wisconsin. I asked him how he's going to get there. Oh, but I won't say nothing.
Wisconsin, that is a real party state.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the first lady of country music, the coal miner's daughter, Miss Loretta Lynn.
Well, I was born the coal miner's daughter in a cabin on a hill in Butcher Holler. We were poor, but we had love.
Please help me welcome our friend and neighbor, Sissy Spacek.
I should tell you the structure for this evening is the first half hour, I get her all to myself. And the second half hour, you can join in and think of questions that you'd like to ask her.
Nothing hard, please.
Nothing hard. No demands for money or any like that. Oh, I tell you, I have had the best time for the past few months. I go to sneak reviews twice a week, Tuesdays and Sundays, and get two more Sissy Spacek movies. And
I'm going to have to interview you.
Well, I was saying to my husband that normally, if you did that, you picked a movie star and you saw all these movies, you'd see what the tricks are, that it's really the same person just with different costumes. But I said, this woman is a chameleon. She's so different. And it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
And my first question is, why do you act? What do you get out of it? What are you hoping to do?
It's what I know. I saw Jack and I went down to Fort Worth, Texas once, and we saw we visited a rodeo school. We were developing a project, and there was a really famous bull rider there, and he was talking to all the young teenage boys who were coming to learn how to be a bull rider, and one of them said, "Monty, why do you do it?" And he said, "It's what I know." I started out as a musician, and that didn't really pan out. And I'm not quite 5'3", and I think I'm shrinking. But I was an unsuccessful model, and acting was the only thing that seemed to work. So that's what I did.
But when you do it, when you're creating a character, what's the joy in it for you?
Well, that in itself is the joy, is creating the character. And I love the collaboration of working on a film, but building the character and getting to the point, hopefully you get to a point where you've absorbed all of your research, and you've worked on your accent, and you've worked on the costume and how you look. And then when you start to work, you forget all those things, and hopefully a character is born. Sometimes it doesn't happen, so sometimes it happens more than others.
Well, since I don't act, it just seems like magic to me. You get a manuscript or a screenplay, And when you decide, yes, I would like to be in this, do they ask you to be a particular character, or do you read through to see what one you'd like to be?
No, they're pretty specific.
Yeah.
When I was backstage, I was listening to the film clips that you were watching, and my heart was just going 90 miles an hour, and I heard the one from The Straight Story, the one with the... with a stutter, and I remember being in Charlottesville at a party, and I was so excited when I just had found out I'd gotten that role, and I was so excited, and I was trying to explain to some of my friends, you know, that I'd gotten this part of this character who had a stutter, and I was so excited, and they couldn't understand why I was so excited. But it was a wonderful thing, because I got to be with this, it was a real person, and I got to spend about a week with her before, and I gave myself headaches trying to learn how to stutter, but by the time the film was over, everybody was stuttering, the director, but I would go, we would walk around town together, and I just got it. I remember the day I got it, and I said to the producer, "You can send her home. I'm fine. I got it." She wasn't gone an hour. I couldn't do it. I couldn't get her back. So it's great when you're playing someone that really exists.
Yeah.
Because you can.
And you had to wear the fake teeth?
I got to wear teeth.
I mean, does that make it hard to speak when you have to wear something like that?
Well, it reminded me to stutter. It reminded me to stutter. But she didn't know. I didn't want her to know that I was wearing prosthetic teeth because I didn't want to hurt her feelings. So we'd go around and we'd stop at the Dairy Queen and we'd stop at all these places and have lunch and meals. And I was eating with these prosthetic teeth in my mouth. I even had a prosthetic palate and little plumpers and things. And I broke so many of the teeth, and I kept calling the makeup artist in Los Angeles to send more teeth. What are you doing? Anyway, just a little trivia.
And I was wondering, as again, I'm not an actress, so I don't know what this is like, but there are certain characters now that are in your repertoire. I don't know if it's like, you know, Three Faces of Eve, if someone can call forth Eve Black or whatever. Are you ever in a social situation where you think, I don't know what to say, I don't know how to behave, but if I was like Babe McGrath, who shot her husband from Crimes of the Heart, she'd know what to say.
You know what happens. I get cue lines sometimes. Just someone doesn't realize they give me a cue line and you go, boing. So that's happened before, and people think you're very bizarre because they have... Usually it's seamless. No one ever knows. They just think I'm very strange.
Although your husband must hear certain lines and go, oh, yeah, I know where that one's from.
Yeah. I've been a calling. That's the one we use a lot around the house.
I wondered also if it makes you more of a compassionate person. Let's say, not compassion to start with, but I mean, if you have had to be someone with stutter, I don't know, was she supposed to be mentally retarded, or was it just a
stutter? I think she was somehow challenged, but just an amazing, darling, funny woman who I just adored.
Do you find that, okay, you played someone who was who shot her husband, and it's all different kinds of things. Do you find
that's
yourself?
One I tried not to bring home, that character. You're safe, Jack.
Do you find it's easy to understand other people? Can you think, yes, I've inhabited that skin for a while. I think I know what that's like.
You know, I think I'm fascinated by people. I'm a people watcher. I've always been fascinated by people. I even like reality TV. It's true. Because I just love to see. I love, you know, I'm a people watcher. And I think that I'm more interested in how different people do the same things. You know, what's your routine in the morning? How do you brush your teeth? How do you fry an egg? You know, it's those kinds of things. How do you move across the room? All those little details about people. I'm stealing from people all the time.
You feel like a magpie.
I'm taking things that I see from people all the time. I think most actors do. This town is filled with wonderful actors.
Oh, the downtown
mall.
Many of
them have performed on this stage.
The downtown mall, that would give you, you know, food for thought for I don't know how long.
I steal from other actors, too.
We'll keep it up, because whatever you're doing, it's working very well. I was wondering, when you were a kid, I guess all kids have, you know, pretend, but I just wonder if you pretended more than others. Remember on Saturday Night Live, Gilda Radner would wear the brownie uniform and jump on the bed and say it's the Judy Miller show. I wonder if you'd been the Sissy Spacek show when you were little.
Well, my mother always said to me as a kid, and I never thought about being an actress when I was young, but she always said, oh, you're so dramatic, you should be an actress. I don't think she meant it in that way. I think I was just a bit of a drama queen. But, you know, this is the funniest thing. I was the third of three children. And by the time I came along, you know, things were pretty chaotic. And I would come home in first grade and say, Mom, I'm supposed to read to you. And she'd say, well, Sissy, she'd be frying chicken. Why don't you go into my room and sit in front of the mirror and read to yourself? I think that's where it started.
I would like her. I would like her.
And later I'd sing to myself.
I had twins who kind of grew up the same way. That's very funny.
You never know. Watch out, parents.
Yeah, I would put the petticoat on my head to be a bride. And for Catholic kids, it's nothing like Necco wafers because those were communion. Am I right? Yes. And so did you kind of live inside your head or did you play with other kids? Did you run with scissors?
I had brothers who, you know, I always wanted to be a boy, and like my brothers.
You're a huge failure.
I'm a huge failure.
At one thing.
You know, I had a wonderful childhood. I you know, climbed trees and played touch football with my brothers and usually got clobbered and, you know, just had a very rural country life.
Okay. Nothing that would have predicted this.
Nothing that would have.
Well, whenever I attempt to write fiction and I create a character, even if it's someone who's just awful, morally reprehensible, if I want to create a character that's three-dimensional, I find I have to love that character. Not accept everything the person does, but I have to love that person in order to generate what that person would do. And I'm wondering if, like, I'm thinking of Ruth Fowler in the bedroom, and that last scene where she goes, "Did you do it? Oh my God, that was just so chilling. That's, were you able to love and not accept what she did, but to love her or that kind of character?"
You know, I think for me, more than loving a character. Now, I'm going to try that because I, up until this one, I haven't. But
I'll take credit for your next Academy Award.
Most of the characters, I just want to understand them. And the greatest thing about acting is your life. You know, your school really is life. You're taking from life, and the most important thing for me in that film was to understand how a mother loves her children, and that I understand. So that made me understand her. It's an interesting thing to go to those places and find those places in yourself.
In yourself, yeah.
It's kind of scary.
Yes, to find.
Oh, really scares Jack.
There is a place there, yes. I've always thought that fiction writing is just a hair's breadth away from mental illness because it's all, you know, living in a dream world. Would you say that's true for acting?
Probably. Maybe more because, I don't know. Ask my friends. I don't know. I've never thought of myself as, you know, I've thought of myself as pretty, you know, straight up.
Or maybe that's
ordinary.
Your outlet.
The thing I love, though, is that, you know, you use things from your own life. And there have been times in my life, usually when I was younger, you know, in a hysterical moment, and you think, don't forget this.
So you're watching yourself perform in real life.
Freaking out, thinking, okay, I can use this later. Don't forget how this feels.
Yes. So it's building up your inventory.
It's kind of a protective mechanism that, you know, always remembering. So the answer is yes.
Again, with Ruth Fowler, if you're not the type, you don't strike me as the type that gets mad very often. I don't know, you have a very gentle way about you. And I wonder, you had to summon up that kind of compressed anger that Ruth felt. And I wonder if after you portrayed her, if you found that your mind sort of knew the way, if it was easier for you to express anger.
Oh, I'm just mad all the time. Actually, anger has always been a difficult emotion for me, one that I'm less familiar with. But unfortunately, now I'm really...
You got it now.
I've got it now.
So it gives you a larger repertoire in your own
of emotions.
In your own life.
That's always been one that's been difficult for me.
Anger?
That's good.
Yeah? Well, your husband's glad for that, and your children, yeah. I'm sure. And I saw one of the movies I saw was Night Mother, which I thought was just stunning, absolutely stunning. And it must drive you crazy when things don't go over well at the box office.
No, it doesn't at all, because I learned early on in my career, I made a film called Badlands that I think is just a wonderful film.
Thank you.
Yes. And it's, you know, Terrence Malick, just brilliant. And I remember thinking, oh, my goodness, when this film comes out, I'm going to have to keep a big stick by the door because people are just going to go crazy. They're going to love it so much. And, you know, it was critically acclaimed, but it really didn't do, you know, I didn't need the stick. And so that was a really wonderful thing for me, because I thought if that wonderful film, you know, didn't go gangbusters at the box office, that's not the way to judge the success of a film. So I try
to just do my work. And then when I finish, when I'm wrapped on the set, it's over for me. And then then whatever happens, happens. The experience for me, you know, is done. And I put that film to bed. And if it does well, that's great. Or if it turns out to be a good film, that's great. That's icing on the cake. But it would be just too difficult to depend on things that you can't control.
I guess that keeps you sane, doesn't it? So you are sane. And I was wondering, in Night Mother, you played someone who was depressed, obviously, because she shoots herself in the end.
Gosh, I've killed my husband.
Yeah, I know. There's a thread running through these. The movie was so wonderful. By the end, it was gagging on a lump in my throat. It was just so moving and wonderful. And Anne Bancroft was fantastic. But I was wondering, what must it be like for you to play someone who's depressed for however long it takes to make the movie?
Well, I was so ready to shoot myself, I tell you, by the time we shot in sequence, and which is very rare on a film. And, you know, each day we'd just, you know, get a little bit closer and a little bit closer. And we were shooting this big, dark soundstage. And my oldest daughter was my only daughter at that point. She was about 3, and she was in Virginia, and I was in Los Angeles on this dark soundstage. And I remember one day, the door opened at the end of the soundstage, and some light came in, like a stream of light. And this little red-headed 3-year-old came in, and everyone in the whole soundstage, because we've been shut in there for about 2 months, went, oh! So that was hard, but I was really depressed.
Yeah. So it is.
But
hard.
I recovered.
Yes. Because it must be hard at the end when you're done shooting for the day to find your happy place again.
Well, you know, some characters you bring home. Most of them you do. And Jack always laughs. You know, there were a lot of characters he liked better than other ones. You know, some of them were a little more difficult to live with.
There weren't any that he liked better than you, I hope.
It's like,
so could you be Babe tonight?
I don't think I'll come on set for that one, Sissy. You just run along.
If he asked you to start being another character, then you're in trouble. But in the other end of the spectrum, in Crimes of the Heart, which is 1986, Jessica Lange and Diane Keaton, Sam Shepard, there was a laughing scene in that was just brilliant. You and Diane Keaton have to tell Jessica Lange that your grandfather has lapsed into an irreversible coma. I mean, this is a bummer of a piece of news to have to give. And they all just start laughing. And laughing is hard to fake. What I was wondering, like, how long did it take to film that? Did you laugh all day?
We laughed all day.
A week?
We laughed all day. But I had a very high fever, so I was actually having an out-of-body experience. If I remember, I was sort of up in the corner of the kitchen near the ceiling watching us laugh, and we were hysterical.
You're
at a loss for words.
No, if you have to laugh, and how do you... Is it just an ensemble thing where you're able to bring that out in each other?
Well, I was sick. I had the high fever, and that took care of me. And I don't, you know, we all really enjoyed each other, so.
Yeah.
I guess we needed a good laugh.
You just did it. Now, speaking of Badlands, 1973, I sat down to watch that, not having known that it was a true story of these two people that were on the run and killed all these people. I didn't know. And it just starts off with, you know, Sissy, you're supposed to be like 13 or something. And how old were you when you did that?
You know, I don't remember, but I was supposed to be 13. I was 20, 21, something like that. 21.
Yeah, you played 13 or 14 real good. And just, you know, ordinary little girl. I just like sat on the edge of my seat.
You know, that was my, I twirled in that. Who knew that I would be able to use that talent? And I did my high school majorette routine that I tried out for majorette.
Is that right?
Would you bring on the baton, please?
Yeah. That character was so, speaking of depression, was so very disengaged and kind of a flat affect. Is that an easier character to play or a harder character to play?
I don't know. You know, I guess with characters, it's just, you know, if you lock into what's right, then it's easy. And if you can't find that groove, then it's really hard.
Regardless of personality.
That was a beautifully written script, and it was a really fantastic director, Terrence Malick. Mm-hmm. And actually, I did that with the president, Martin Sheen.
And a fine-looking young fella he was.
I was cast before him, and I was getting to test with every darling Hollywood actor at
work,
the time.
Work.
And when Martin was going to come in, Terry said, oh, well, he's much too old, and he's not right for the part, but we're going to see him anyway. We have to do this just as a, you know, because I know the agent, and he's a really nice person, so we'll see Martin. And we did the same test, the same scene that we had done with 20 other actors, and it was like, I'd never done it before. It was like the scene became something completely different, and he walked in and he just was the character. It was so amazing.
Are those just, is that one of the museum moments of your
career? It was, because you know, I probably thought I knew just about everything about that time, and I realized I didn't know anything. Martin was amazing.
The very first movie I ever saw you in was a PBS movie called Verna, USO Girl.
Yeah.
And it, you just said it only aired once.
It only aired once.
Yeah.
There was some producer that I can't remember his name. Somebody was a big Hollywood producer who bought the rights to it, wanted to make it into a feature. With Bob Hope, and, you know, and put a real war behind it. But anyway, go ahead with your...
Well, I had a hell of a time getting a copy of this. I ended up, I went on the internet and bought a copy, so you could see it at my house if you're nice to me. And it's interesting because Sissy, as we know from Coal Miner's Daughter, has a lovely voice. In the role of Verna, USO Girl, she had to be a young girl who was recruited for this three-person USO show. And she can't sing, she can't dance, but this is her big career. And so I wonder what it was like for you as a singer to have to sing badly.
Well, they just put everything in a key that I couldn't even get to.
Oh.
The funniest part of the story, though, is that we made this movie. We made it for PBS. It was really wonderful. It was William Hurt's very first...
And a fine-looking Nordic god he was
at that time.
Oh.
Yes, he was.
Yes.
But I forgot what I was...
I'm thinking about him.
Oh, my gosh. I do remember there was one shot that was like a mass of 1,000 GIs,
yes,
and Bill was in the middle. And really, you could only see Bill.
Yeah.
He was very, he had a great presence on film.
And that was his first film?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I know what the story was I was going to tell. The director of that's name is Ron Maxwell. Mm-hmm. And it was his very first film. He was actually in film school, NYU film school at the time. And he was giving interviews after we did this little show. And he was telling everyone, and this was in particular, it was an interview he did with Rolling Stone magazine. He said, I couldn't sing. I was perfect for the role. I couldn't sing. Well, I think that's probably one of the main reasons I did Coal Miner's Daughter. I was so mad at him.
Bastard. It's terrible.
It was horrible.
I mean, it was just great acting.
Well, it was bad singing.
I was watching that again yesterday.
It did hurt my feelings.
Well, I put it on because I was trying to remember there's a scene that is my favorite Sissy Spacek scene, and that's saying something because I've seen a lot of them, and it's she's very frightened anyway because it's a USO show and there's bombs bursting in air and it's not easy, but then it gets worse and worse and worse until they're in a basement, and Verna, Sissy, is catatonic in a fetal position in the corner, and they ask that their GI's down, stuck down there with her too, and they ask them to put on a show. Well, she can hardly speak, let alone put on a show, and you put on the little bunny costume.
Oh, that was cute.
It was. It was so cute, the thing you did. And there's a point where you're standing there just in the fright in your face. It was so believable. It didn't seem like acting at all. And then you said the first couple of lines, the devil is in your heart, and could hardly sing. And then there was no band because there was no band stuck in the cellar with him. And all the GIs in the audience started to hum it to help you. And they're going,
bless their hearts.
And you were feeding off of that and slowly transform. And there was nobody home yesterday, and I just let it rip. And I was just, the tears were sliding down my face. That is my favorite scene, to tell you that.
Thank you.
Is that so long ago that it's hard for you to remember filming?
I have no recollection of that scene at all.
I'm that way with some of my children. Waldo, no, I don't remember him at all. That's very funny. When was the last time you saw Verna, USO girl?
Oh, I don't know. Years and years ago.
Do you have it?
No, but you do.
I have it. Be nice to me. No, that's a treasure. Another thing I wanted to ask you about is you... in Coal Miner's Daughter, you had to play a 14-year-old, and then you had to play Loretta Lynn in her 30s.
And her 40s.
Was it her 40s? Even better.
I remember when 40 was a stretch to play. I was worried.
And also, there's an amazing age transformation in Violets Are Blue, very sweet movie. And how do you do it? How do you?
Well, in Coal Miner's Daughter, I was real skinny in the early part, and I remember watching 12 and 13-year-old girls at the time, and they never walked anywhere. They would run from one place to the other. So I did that, you know, so a lot of it was body language. Uh-huh. And I kind of raised my voice a little bit, the pitch of my voice, and as I aged, my voice got a little lower, and I ate a little more. And they kind
Ooh,
of helped me
fun.
Out with the costumes. It took them hours to make me look 40.
Not really. And another, the movie that I would say was the most hypnotically engaging was Three Women, the Robert Altman movie. And I put it on at like 10 or 11 at night, thinking I'll watch half of it the next half. And I, like 1 in the morning, I'm still like this. And it's DVD, and so you can do the commentary part. And I'm watching everything having to do with this movie. My favorite scene is when you sit down at a bar, and you're playing a very young girl, maybe even in braids, and you downed an entire pitcher of beer. That was wicked impressive. And how did you do it, and was it real beer?
It was real beer.
Was that?
And we had to do it a couple of times, if I remember correctly. I mean, it was a huge pitcher of beer. And I was feeling no pain.
Is that right?
And I actually then did a scene where I fall through some saloon doors backwards, and I broke my tailbone because I was really smashed.
Literally.
I did. There was another scene on that, I don't know why we were using real beer. And I did a scene where I was smoking cigarettes and I got sick from smoking, and so we had to reshoot it with me chewing gum instead, which was much better.
Yeah.
I learned a great lesson.
So was it very different working with Robert Altman compared to other directors?
He's wonderful to work with, and it is very different working with him. With him, we had an outline for the script. And each day when we finished the scenes, the script supervisor would hand us the scene all typed up. And so at the end of the, when we finished the film, we had a finished script. And that's not usually the way it works.
Quite an adventure. Our time is running out here. The other night, I sat down with my husband and daughter, Jill, and we watched Blast from the Past, and it was such fun. I had no idea. I missed this when it came out, and you were great. And that's your first comedy, isn't it?
Well, I've been very funny in some dramas, but... well, you know, it's if you consider Crimes of the Heart a comedy.
Well, yes, yes, yes. Southern Gothic sort of thing.
So, yeah, I guess it was.
Would you like to do more comedy?
Yeah, I would, guys.
So if you know anybody, we could network the crowd. Well, one more question is, you have worked with some amazing leading men, Jack Lemmon, Eric Roberts, Kevin Costner, Christopher Walken, Martin Sheen, Mel Gibson, Tommy Lee Jones. I wonder if you have a favorite or a most memorable.
You know, I was crazy about all of them because when you're working on a project with someone and the right actors are cast, it's really magic. And, you know, no one in the world could have played Doolittle Lynn but Tommy Lee Jones. And no one but Martin Sheen could have been Kit Carruthers in Badlands. And so, you know, they were just wonderful all to work with. I really loved working with Tommy Lee. He was just intense and wonderful. We had a really wonderful working relationship. And he could have just snapped me in half if he wanted to. I have great respect for him. We did a scene in Coal Miner's Daughter where he's driving a bulldozer down a mountain through the woods where he's, you know, going between little trees. And he's got pages and pages of dialogue while he's driving this bulldozer. And all I say is, you know, I grunt every now and then. I go, and I'm perched on the side, and I'm just, I'm humbled by scenes like that. You know, people driving bulldozers, riding wild horses. So
well, that's why I felt watching.
I loved them all.
Well, that's why I felt watching you in all these movies. She is like butter.
I do have a great Chris Walken story.
Like butter. Is he creepy?
Not at all. He's great. He's wonderful.
He always plays a creepy character on Saturday Night Live.
They're in, I don't know if most of you probably didn't see Blast from the Past, but we're a couple who moved down into a bomb shelter, and we stay there. We move there when, into the bomb shelter when we're very young, and we get very old. We stay in there a really long time, 35 years. And so we both aged, and we had the most fabulous age makeup, you know, prosthetics and gray hair, and he birdseed and everything. It was wonderful. But he was amazing. He looked amazing, and he's a very handsome man, and he was a very handsome older man too. But one day we were both in our age makeup, and I was in my trailer having lunch because it was, you know, I just didn't want to really walk around like that. And I saw Chris out the window. He was walking back from having had lunch. And a really cute girl was walking along the sidewalk and passed him. And he kind of smiled at her and said something. And she was like, And I witnessed it. God be my witness, I saw it. It was so great. That was a moment I'll never forget. So you better work fast.
And completely unrelated to anything else, in Carrie, at the end, was that your arm reaching up out of the grave?
It was. And Jack dug the hole.
As the art director. Okay. Well, on that note, It's your turn.
A marriage built on trust.
I guess. So were you, I mean, totally under the dirt and you just had to do this?
Well, I think they had plywood on top of me.
Oh,
I was in a little hole, but not too far down.
I had never seen Carrie before, and I saw
But her. I do all my own
stunts.
Foot and hand work, so.
And we admire you for it.
Thank you.
Well, I see a hand right here.
Yeah, we can't see a thing.
Oh,
please, yes.
Great. I was one of those few people who saw you in Badlands in the theater when I was a much younger man.
We were all much younger then.
I had a guy jump 5 seats over when your hand came out.
Oh, and Carrie, you mean.
He tried to trample me as he got out of the aisle during Carrie. Oh, yeah.
It was Carrie.
But I wanted to ask you specifically about In the Bedroom, which is a wonderful film. I thought it was a
Thank you.
In it. There's a scene where you... throw the dishes down, when you have the big argument with your husband. How much of that was scripted? What was the evolution of that scene?
It was all scripted. It was all scripted. And it was really wonderful because we shot it in three, actually. And we shot it all in one long piece. And so we were able to really get momentum going. And it was really, it's about as close as I've ever come to theater. Thank you. That Todd Field wrote the script to that, and he was really, really, he's a really brilliant writer and wonderful filmmaker. So,
another question? Yes.
I really love that film as well. I heard from backstage there was a clip. That you saw from Long Walk Home.
Just telling her husband.
And that had to do with the bus boycott and in Montgomery, Alabama. And it was written by a young writer who actually was a child. He was the age of the actress who played my daughter in the film when that took place. And then he grew up and he wrote this wonderful script. So just remember, little pictures have big ears. Be careful. It was a wonderful project. And we had, it was developed by a director who was directing for his first time. And after the first week, he was fired, and then some of the actors were recast. Whew, I made it. And so it was kind of tough going for a long time, and but it was a really great experience. Whoopi was wonderful to work with, and you know, we all cared deeply about it. I think it came out well.
And your transformation was interesting to watch because it was reflected in your wardrobe. You started out with the
big
skirts and the hair, and gradually got more toned down.
My skirts got straighter,
yes.
And my hair got tighter.
Yes, right. You wore pants.
Method acting.
Yeah. A question?
Would you get that, please?
Oh, over there. Over here.
Oh, thank you.
Also, I'd like to say we're all familiar with the film legacy, but living in Charlottesville, I wondered if you were ever interested or inclined to perform theater, because we all so enjoy seeing you on the stage.
Oh,
there she is, on the stage.
But, you know, in a play,
are you a theater actress? There you go. You know, I used to think, oh, well, someday when my children grow up, I'll do theater. I'll do theater later. Well, now I can't remember anything. You know, so I think it's too late. I missed that this lifetime. I am going to be I enjoy theater so much, and I enjoy theater in Charlottesville so much. We're so fortunate to have the actors and the directors and the,
you know, we really have a sophisticated population here. A lot of readers, a lot of...
And live arts.
Yeah, it's just really a wonderful place to live. And I'm going to watch you on stage.
Yes, right here.
During your introduction that Mr. O'Neill gave to us, he got kudos for having been so quick to jump on board for this project. So somewhere between that and when you were little, reading to yourself in the mirror, can you attribute to anything or any person or any time in your life where the seed got planted to inquire more about your right to express as opposed to just the medium of acting or writing or reading? In other words, the right to express as distinct from the expression itself.
You know, I don't know where that came from. I think probably it was the way I was raised. That my parents listened to us. I know we had a family council, and we all had a vote, and it worked great until there were three children. Worked great for us. But I think I don't know the answer to that question, but. You know, maybe it's growing up in a small town and realizing that, you know, we do have a voice and we should have a voice and, you know, everyone's voice should be heard.
And your cousin, was that an influence too, Rip Torn?
Oh, I don't know if it influenced my, you know, that, but he was certainly a good actor. Oh, yeah.
Is that his real name?
His real name is Elmore Rural.
Spell R-U-R-A-L?
R-U, I don't know, I can't spell R-U-R-A-L. Yeah, Rural.
Elmore Rural.
Yes.
Well, how about that? That was worth the price of admission, I think.
But Rip was his, he was nicknamed that in the Army. So.
Oh, I see. Another question. Right there.
I was just in the right place at the right time, I think, and I went to New York to be a musician. I was a singer and songwriter, and someone, you know, suggested that I study acting, and I thought, oh, that would be great. I'll do that. And before that, I hadn't really wanted to be an actor because my cousin was Rip Torn, who was a wonderful actor, and his wife, he was married to Geraldine Page, who was one of the great actresses of all time, and so I thought, well, they do that, so I'm gonna do this music thing because nobody else in the family does that.
Isn't it amazing how people and families polarize like that? It's kind of a shame. I'm glad you got over that.
But it was just kind of an accident, and thank goodness I went with it. Or I would have still been a fledgling carrying my guitar.
You've been listening to a conversation between Academy Award-winning actress Sissy Spacek and writer Janice Jaquith. Spacek was appearing at a fundraiser for the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression's proposed memorial to free speech. At the event, Center Executive Director Josh Wheeler announced that billionaire John Kluge has donated half of the monument's $250,000 price tag. The May 7th event also featured a silent auction, which brought in at least another $50,000. If all goes according to plan, Wheeler says the chalkboard will be constructed this fall. This is the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. I'm Sean Tubbs. Thanks for listening.